Hi, travelers. Kevin here. And believe it or not, we are cruising towards the end of the Juno and Second Citadel series, which is wild. That's a lot to wrap my head around. Hopefully it's not news to you that this is the final season of Juno and Second Citadel, but if it is, welcome. We only have a few stories left. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to sort of give you a broad outline of what the release schedule for those stories will be. If you are subscribed to our online newsletter, which is on Patreon, this is all going to be repeat information. If you're not subscribed to our online newsletter, why not? It's free. Just head on over to patreon.com/thepenumbrapodcast. You can join, you can follow us for free. And every other week or so, you will get access to a traveler's log, a newsletter where we update you on news. And Harley and I write a little thing about our creative process each time. And we give you recommendations for things we've been watching, reading, playing. You get some recommendations from the cast and crew. It's a great time. And especially where these shows are coming to a close fairly soon. If you want updates on what we're planning next, what we're going to do next, because we are not disappearing off the face of the planet. At least it's not on my schedule. I'm not planning on disappearing off the face of the planet. The best way to do that is to follow us over there, because we will keep you updated every step of the way. So if you are mourning, like I am, the endings of these shows, and you are looking forward to the next thing, make sure you go on over to patreon.com/thepenumbrapodcast. Join us for free. That's enough hemming and or hawing, though. Let's jump into it. Let's talk about the release schedule for the rest of the season. So these are broad dates. Over the course of April to May, you can expect the next Second Citadel story, The Fall, parts 1 and 2. From May to June, you can expect another Juno story. I'm not going to give you the title yet. You're going to have to be patient. Then from June to July will be the Second Citadel finale. And the end of July / early August will be the Juno Steel finale. That is how close we are. We are cruising towards end of July, early August. This 8-year set of stories is coming to an end, which is wild. It's hard for me to wrap my head around. Because we are so close to the end, I do have to ask, if you have ever thought about supporting The Penumbra on Patreon, if you've ever thought about supporting us financially, if you have a friend or a family member or anybody else who has thought about supporting us financially, now's the time. It is not easy for me to ask for money. It's tough. But I do have to say our support has flagged a little bit over the course of the season on Patreon. And we are sort of right on the knife's edge of being able to continue to do this and being able to do the next things that we want to do, the next big secret projects that we want to do. We get exit surveys from Patreon that say why people have stopped pledging. And for the vast majority of everybody, it has been financial situations changing. It's a tough time to be a person right now. So really don't stretch yourself past a point that is safe for you to pledge or up your pledge. I would feel just awful if anybody did that. But if you have any spare income that you're willing to send our way, if our stories have meant something to you, if you want to show us that they've meant something to you, if you want to see the next thing that we make, now's the time. And you get access to, at this point, a frankly insane amount of bonus content. At the $7 level, you get access to all the production scripts, which are always full of bonus stuff, behind-the-scenes stuff. And at the $10 level, you get access to like hundreds of hours of commentaries at this point that range from actually serious, this is how we make the show type stuff, and extremely silly, breathing with the boys, Lord Arm fan cast type stuff. So it would just mean the world to us if you could support us and help us out. It is no exaggeration to say that the only thing that I want to do with my life is make stories, make stuff for you all to see. And that's only going to be possible if our support keeps up. And I know it's going to fall a little bit after the end of Juno and Second Citadel. So anything that you can do to show that you are going to stick with us, that you're going to help us out, will make our next project more likely, stronger, better, harder, better, faster, stronger, etc. And thank you so much. If you're already pledging, thank you so much just for listening. It's crazy that we've gotten to do this as long as we have. And I'm so, so grateful for it. That's enough of that, though. You all have a story to get to. So I will see you later. And I'll see you in not too long for the finales to these stories.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including ones that really speak to me, like Protein Plus for jocks, or Vegan and Veggie for vegetarians. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/penumbra50 and use code penumbra50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code penumbra50 at factormeals.com/penumbra50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Good evening, traveler, and welcome to the Penumbra. Tonight's tale is The Indomitable Duelist.
Duel you to the death? But why?
Those are the rules, I'm afraid. I have no control over them. From any group of creatures that scales a Tengu's peak, one must face the Tengu in a duel to the death.
And if we refuse?
I will be forced to hunt you to the ends of the universe and kill each and every one of you in turn.
Are you certain I can't interest you in some snow rabbit? It's really very good.
You could let us go. You don't have to hunt us down.
I do, I'm afraid.
But why?
Why must the genie grant wishes? Why must a sphinx ask riddles? The greatest magical power is often tethered to the most restrictive rules. The universe prefers things that way, I think. It makes them much more interesting. And the universe loves nothing so much as a good story. I do not enjoy this aspect of my existence. I have gone to great pains to minimize the number of travelers who scale my mountain. Most turn back when my blizzard strikes, but you did not. And so here we are. You should be grateful, I think.
Grateful? For what?
I could have left you to die in the snow, but I thought you'd prefer to have a choice over which of you will die instead. If I was wrong, of course, feel free to leave at any time. I can rectify my mistake swiftly enough.
The tales say the Tengu revel in the duel.
The tales were all written centuries ago. Everything grows old eventually. I have no desire to duel, and even less desire to kill. And so the three of you are welcome to stay here upon my peak for as long as you like. For the rest of your lives, if you choose. But if you ever wish to leave...
You'll have to kill one of us.
She'll have to duel one of us. There's a difference.
Ha ha ha! I have never lost a duel.
Caroline, can I talk to you for a moment?
Yeah, I'm gonna want to get on this one too.
Take your time and make yourselves at home. There is no rush. Very little happens on a mountaintop.
Caroline, what were you thinking?
Not very much, I'm guessing.
This is no concern to either of you. I will recover from my wounds, and then I will duel the Tengu.
Caroline, you're going to lose.
Perhaps. And what of it? Don't you see how dire our circumstances are?
You stand no chance.
We stand no chance. We who live in this universe, we who have ever associated with a monster, every one of us. If Galahad is in league with those invaders, they can want only one thing. And if they were willing to destroy Silvershore to get it, they will not stop to consider human life. It is almost certain that I will die in my attempt to best the Tengu, but I must try. I will die either way.
But why? What the hell do you expect to get out of fighting her?
Tengu, the tales say that...
Oh, I know exactly what the tales say. You don't have to repeat them. I can see and hear everything from atop this mountain.
Very well. Then, is it true what they say about defeating a Tengu in combat?
How would she know? She said she's never lost.
I have never, but my careless siblings have from time to time. And yes, the tales are true. A Tengu, once defeated in a duel, must obey a single command.
Then, would it be possible
for me to defeat the off-world invaders in their arrow planes, artillery, and armored landships? I wonder that myself.
Aeroplanes and artillery and landships? What are those?
She must mean their machines.
They have more than just the flying ones?
And hold on, how the hell did you know about any of that?
I see everything from up here, he human. I saw when the invaders shot their artillery into the fortress known as Terminus, destroying its downward bridge. I saw when they dropped their first bombs on the verdant east, scarring the universe and creating those desert sands of insanity. And I saw when my youngest brother, together with the universe itself, repelled their arrow planes and sent the invaders off to lick their wounds for centuries. Until just a few days ago, when they returned to level Silvershore.
Then it's gone. Silvershore is really gone?
Its husk remains, and a handful of survivors, but little more. I am sorry. Such a terrible loss of life.
Then you understand how dire our situation is. Not just us three, you as well, honored Tengu. If the invaders from over the world's edge continue their assault across the universe, they will surely reach the frosts before long.
Oh, my situation is far worse than that. Even now, the invaders have installed machines in the ruins of Silvershore that sap the universe's magic from the very ground. Without magic to sustain me, I will wither long before they reach my mountain. They will kill me easily enough then.
Then your very survival is at stake. You must...
I think what she's trying to say is, won't you help us, Tengu? It's in your best interest, too, and...
I'm afraid I must stop you there, half-human. If I could leave this mountain, I would gladly help you. I and my five living siblings together could handedly destroy the invaders, but we cannot leave of our own accord.
You can't?
You just said your younger brother beat these invaders once before.
My youngest brother was always careless. A cunning southern warrior once took advantage of this, defeated him in a duel, and commanded him to repel the invaders. He was glad to do it, but that same carelessness cost him his life many centuries later at the hands of the human called Galahad. I cannot make the same mistake.
Even if it means everybody dies?
I said I cannot. It is not my choice. I cannot hold back in a duel any more than these humans can ride the wind or pass unbroken through stone. It is impossible to me. I am sorry.
Understood. Well, if the Tengu is resolved not to kill us, we at least have the advantage of time. Not very much of it. You heard what she said. The invaders are already taking magic from the universe. Even so, that is time to plan. If Galahad could manage to outsmart a Tengu, surely the three of us can do the same. Lamorak, where are you looking? Are you even listening?
Hey, Tengu. You just need to duel one of us, right?
That is so.
And does that person get to name the rules of the duel?
That is always how it is done.
Then I'll do it.
What? Lamorak, you idiot!
Just answer a few of my questions and we'll be good to go.
But, Lam, why?
Hey, don't sweat it, Olala. Me and my piercing eye have got a plan.
Wow, this staircase sure goes underground for a long time. Are you sure this is the right place, Damien?
Absolutely, friend Talfrin. It's no wonder these caves run so deep. If the Monster Senate has been hiding St. Damien's spear for so many years, it follows that they must have hidden it away most secretly.
I don't get why they wouldn't just destroy it.
Thank the saints they didn't. Just think how fortunate we are, friends, to have found the very relic that saved humanity once in the past. Surely it will do so again. And with St. Aaron's hammer safely in the Citadel, that leaves only one last relic to procure.
You really think we should try and get all three of them?
I hardly think we have a choice. If you recall the tale of our first Citadel's fall, St. Aaron's hammer repelled the army on land, St. Damien's spear the forces in the Lake of Tranquility, and St. Ferdinand's slingshot the foes in the sky. To protect ourselves on all fronts, all the relics will be necessary.
The word repelled is doing a lot of work there, Damien.
Whatever do you mean?
Rilla's kind of got a point. I mean, the monsters in the Senate sounded really mad about this massacre in the waves thing, and didn't... I mean, I don't want to make anybody upset, but...
But what, my friend?
Didn't the saints kill kind of a lot of monsters? Which seems... not super cool to me anymore?
Yes, I think I see her meaning. Well, would that it were not so, but until the universe is at peace, there will always be a need for weapons. And the weapon is only as good as the man who wields it.
I guess...
That makes sense to me.
A weapon is only as good as the man who wields it. Therefore, it follows that because St. Damien was a good man, a great man, then what he did with this weapon must also be good.
Does it?
Maybe, but the senator said all kinds of other weird things about the saints, too. They said...
Well, all of this can be sorted once we've taken the spear for ourselves. It is a Citadel relic, after all. No matter its use, it should be kept in the Temple of Tranquility.
But...
Look at this grand chamber before us. And through those gates at the chamber's end. Is that... Saints above. That spear. Just like in the ancient portrait of St. Damien the Tranquil. That handle of carved bone. The twin points at the tip. The golden cord for retrieving it once thrown. It's incredible.
Those chimera statues standing in the doorway, don't they seem kinda creepy?
Damien, don't you think we should be a little more careful?
Careful? We are in the presence of a saint's very power, my Rilla. We could not possibly be safer.
Damien, the
statues are turning their heads towards you.
What? Ha!
Humans, leave this place at once. Or we guardians of the spear will set our wrath upon you. Should a human ever set foot through these gates, we will burn him to cinders, then his cinders to ashes, then his ashes to dust.
Seems a little extreme.
This is our task forevermore, to prevent a second massacre in the waves. You have been warned.
That spear is not yours to keep, vile statues. With St. Damien as my witness, I swear!
Don't turn away. You will not ignore me, fiendish figurines.
Damien, I don't think they can hear you. They must just be traps. Aram might know a way around them, but if I ever did, I can't remember it.
Oh, well, too bad about the spear. Looks like it's time for us to give up and leave. Why don't we try the Western Wastes next? I hear it's really nice this time of year.
Oh, no, my friends. No, no. I have set my eyes upon a most sacred treasure, a relic that belongs in the hands of a follower of that most tranquil saint, and I mean to have it.
Damien, you heard the statues. You know this is a bad idea.
As a follower of my saint, I have no choice, Myrilla. But with tranquility at my side, yes, I think I may know just the way forward.
Well, he-human, you said you would have questions.
Just want to make sure we're on the same page about a few things. If going around with her for a little while's taught me anything, it's that you all do things a little different down here in the Frosts.
I'll say, this kind of masculine showboating reeks of the North.
You say you want a duel. Where I come from, a duel is an equal battle between two single combatants, each using the same type of weapon. That sound right to you?
That is the definition, yes.
So, how are we going to do that exactly? I don't see any weapons up here.
I can see that you have a weapon of your own. And as for myself...
Pulling a sword from her wound, just like Galahad did.
Not just a sword, little half-human. Shaped by wind and crystal blood, a Tengu's blade can take the form of any weapon I choose. You name the weapon, he-human, and I will create its twin. A duel is not a duel unless both combatants are equally armed.
Just what I was hoping. Last question, and then we can get started.
Lamorak.
My weapon. Do you recognize it?
It is no legendary blade, if that's what you're asking. It has no name and little history. It appears to be a wooden training sword, the kind they give to knights in training in the Second Citadel to the north.
That's right. It's an old one, too. I've had it ever since I was in training, longer ago than I'd like to think about. It's the first sword I was ever given. Think you can copy it?
It is done.
Damn, you are good, aren't you?
The very best, I regret to tell you. And the terms of our duel?
Citadel Knights play a dueling game with swords like these when they're in training. It's called...
3 point. I am aware.
And, for those of us who are not aware?
It is a very basic fencing bout. One receives a point for touching one's opponent below the neck and above the belt with one's wooden sword. The first to 3 points wins.
Lamorak, if you're plotting what I suspect, it won't work.
What won't work? What's he planning?
You may be more familiar with this weapon and this game, but that gives you little advantage here. You are challenging a veritable god. You've been told that her blade can repel armies. This is suicide.
That's my proposal, Tengu. You and me play a round of 3 point. If I win, you help us send those off-world invaders packing. If you win, you get to kill me. So what do you say?
I accept your terms.
Better start quaking in those boots now, Tengu. I used to be the 3 points champ back in my day. 40 years ago.
Lam, don't. It's too dangerous.
Damien, be careful! It's dangerous!
Oh, Saint Damien, your tranquility. I appeal to you now, O Saint, while deep in darkness. I appeal to you who have the patience to weather stone, the calm to still the waves, the tranquility to pass unburned beneath the flames of conflict, of panic, of unbridled chaos.
Damien?
I appeal to you, Saint, because I have heard your voice in the past, and by your great generosity I have managed the impossible in Fort Terminus. I appeal to you, Saint, because I have no choice besides. Let faith be my bulwark. Let me pass unharmed, Saint Damien. Grant me this miracle.
I am called Reaper Kestrel of the Tengu. I have never lost a duel, and I do not intend to do so now. I will ask only once more, so think carefully, he human. Are you certain you wish to take this risk?
I'm sure, but my name's not he human. It's Sir Lamorak of the Piercing Eye. And by the time we're done here, you'll know where that name came from.
Such confidence. I may enjoy this yet. Well, Sir Lamorak of the Piercing Eye, I'm waiting.
New foe has arisen, my saint. An invader of cruelty and violence these northern wilds have never seen, and it seems the only language they will heed is the language that they speak to every living thing their machines can reach, a tongue of blood and steel.
Ha!
That's your point, Sir Lamorak.
But the tango didn't move. So she's going to let him win then?
You heard her, Olala. She is incapable of letting him win. Whatever her game is, I think it's only just begun.
What's the matter, Kestrel? Feeling a little stiff?
Merely observing. I've never used one of these particular swords before, but it seems you hold it like this.
What is it? Caroline, what is it?
Her stance. She's mimicked Lamorak's dueling stance exactly, down to the centimeter. She's even copied his flaws, the weakness in his knees.
Hey, I think my knees are doing pretty damn good for my age, thanks.
She's copying him? But what does that mean?
Watch and you may see, half-human. Whenever you are ready, Sir Lamorak.
Neat trick. Let's see how it goes up against the real thing.
There's no negotiation with such a foe, my saint. We are hopelessly outmatched against them. And however it sickens my heart to think that we must face them on their own terms, must meet their force with an equal or greater violence.
Damien, are you all right?
No, this isn't right.
Ha! 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 Ha!
Hell, don't you ever get tired?
No.
Lamb!
That's one point to each of us. I disagree with your companion's assessment of your form. Physical weakness is not your most glaring flaw. I suspect, in fact, that you are a greater duelist now than you ever were in your prime.
Yeah? How so?
Your stance is rotten with overconfidence. You twist your wrist with each thrust in a way that saps strength from the blow. You dance back and forth on tiptoe in a way that you believe to be dashing, but it ruins your balance. With the strength of youth, you would only strengthen these flourishes, not the fundamentals of combat.
You think so?
I know so. I have dueled many, many warriors like you. And I've surpassed them all. Just as I've already surpassed you.
Well, you're probably right that you're better than me. But you're wrong about one thing, Kestrel.
Oh?
You've never dueled anybody like me.
Ah! That remains to be seen. Half-human, I would recommend you tie your companion to that sled now and begin your descent. When our duel is finished, and the time has come for me to claim Sir Lamorak's life, I will change. I have a tendency to lose myself in the transformation. I wouldn't want to harm either of you in my frenzy.
Stay where you are, Olala.
Lamorak, throwing away your own life is one thing, but to risk hers...
I said stay there. I got this under control.
Okay, Lam. I believe you.
So be it. Well, Sir Lamorak, would you like to see what your form might look like without its many flaws?
Talk's just talk. If you're going to beat me, then do it.
As you wish.
Ha! St. Damien, You told me once that to remain tranquil in changing tides is to change oneself. And so I must truthfully state the shiftings of my heart. I do not understand, my saint, how you chose to slay so many monsters with your miracle, even in the name of protecting your neighbors. I do not understand what my place should be in the war to come, when in your name I have sworn against drawing my bow for blood. I do not understand in any way how people devoted to peace may survive in times of violence. I have unwavering faith in you, Saint Damian, but I must admit that as I have seen more of the universe and its people, that my loyalty is no longer unconditional. It is built from the wealth of my experience, from the words of those I love, from the perspectives of those I meet. I choose to follow you, my saint, and I believe that choice lends my loyalty more power. But it would be a lie to say that I follow your steps without first understanding them.
Tuck your elbow. Exhaustion is no excuse for carelessness. Lighter on your feet now. That's it.
Damn it, stop giving me advice. Where the hell did she go?
My point, Sir Lamorak. One more and your life is forfeit. Half-human, this is your final warning. I cannot be held responsible for what I do once I've turned.
I'm not going anywhere. If Lam says he has this under control, then I believe him.
Oh la la.
I cannot, will not promise that I will spill the blood of men as you spill the blood of monsters. But if you protect me, O Saint of Tranquility, if you allow me to hold in my hands your most sacred spear, I swear to you I will use it to protect what I can, as best I can, without losing myself in the process. I pray that this is enough for you, Saint Damian. Protect me.
Damian?
You were warned.
Damian!
I can't see him! There's too much fire! All that water! Where did all that water come from?
Damian? Damian!
There is no need for fear, friends. I am well. Sodden, but well.
But that's impossible! That's unbelievable! That's
a miracle.
Any last words, Sir Lamorak of the Piercing Eye?
I'll save him for later.
Prepare yourself.
Lam, she's coming right at you.
Not for long.
Lamorak, what are you doing?
Looks like I snapped my sword in half. Whoops.
You idiot. You stand no chance unarmed.
Actually, I think unarmed is the only way I do stand a chance. Isn't that right, Kestrel?
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty good, wasn't it?
But I don't understand.
And you aren't the only one. What's so damned funny, Lamorak?
You want to give them your definition of a duel again, or should I?
A duel? A duel?
I'll take it then. A duel is an equal battle between two combatants, each using the same type of weapon. I've got no weapon, so that means there can't be a duel.
But what about Caroline's sword?
Off the mountain! She threw it off the mountain!
Thanks, Caroline.
Utterly ridiculous.
Now, let's be clear. I don't think this gets me off the hook, Kestrel. We're still mid-duel. But if there aren't any weapons up here, you're gonna have to let us down the mountain so I can find a weapon down there.
I see no other choice. We will conclude our business when you hold a weapon next. But be warned, Sir Lamorak of the Piercing Eye. I see everything from atop this mountain. If you ever touch a weapon again, our duel will continue. I guarantee it.
So, we're free to go?
You may leave, yes. Although free is not the word I'd choose.
Which solves our essential problem not at all. Well done, Lamorak. Nicely done indeed.
But are you certain you can't help us, Reaper Kestrel? Even knowing what you do about the invaders?
He did not best me, and so I cannot leave this mountain. I am sorry.
Then you won't even lift a finger to protect yourself.
I did not say that. But the kind of help that I could give, I wonder whether it would be for the best in the end. Destruction at such a scale. Can we truly say with any confidence that there are good destroyers and bad?
What do you mean?
I may know of a way to eradicate these off-world invaders. A set of weapons powerful enough to turn the tide in the universe's favor.
What? And you didn't think to mention this until now.
I didn't know if you could be trusted, did I? It reminds me of my youngest brother, the Tengu that Galahad killed. Reaper Corvid was his name. If Tengu have a reputation as tricksters, that reputation was earned by him. He would have enjoyed meeting you immensely, Sir Lamorak of the Piercing Eye.
But how did Galahad kill him? You seem so strong.
Corvid took great pride in getting to know his opponents before their duels. He would feast with them, treat them as guests on his mountaintop. Galahad spent 2 weeks gaining his trust, then poisoned him. Anti-magic stone, finely ground, dissolved into the liquor they shared. Then he killed my brother while he was unarmed. A cowardly method, but effective on one as trusting as Corvid.
Of course.
But back to the matter at hand. I didn't particularly see the need to tell you about these weapons that could defeat the off-world invaders.
And why not?
You are all aware that these weapons exist. You yourself once held one in your hands. They tell stories of these three relics in the Northern Citadel, however inaccurate they may be.
You mean the Saint's relics? Saint Aaron's hammer, Saint Damian's spear, and Saint Ferdinand's slingshot?
Angelo used to tell me those stories, but you said they're inaccurate?
Of course they are. They're myths. I doubt there ever was a Saint Aaron, Damian, or Ferdinand.
Oh no, they certainly existed. I saw them myself, along with the entire fall of that first citadel. The relics Sir Lamorak has named played quite a part in it. I can see in the injured one's eyes that you are set on using these to defeat our enemies from over the world's edge.
Of course I am. I don't care for this philosophizing about good destroyers and bad. The offworlders and their machines seek to kill us, and I will not allow us to be killed. I see no reason why the issue should be any more complicated than that.
Well, perhaps it isn't. Go then and use them with a clear conscience.
But I would like to know about them. I think if they're as dangerous as you say, Reaper Kestrel, we should know everything before we decide whether or not to use them.
I'm with Olala, and we don't even know where they are yet. But I'm guessing you do, Kestrel?
To an extent. Sit by my fire and listen, then. I will tell you the true story of the three saints of the Second Citadel. It happened once, very long ago, that there stood a small human settlement in the northern wilds, called by its inhabitants the Citadel. Humans and monsters had shifted their allegiances for hundreds of years. The first humans settled in what is now the Wayward East, but they lost the records of their off-world heritage in the collapse of their first settlements. Nowhere was the human-monster relationship quite as tumultuous as the Northern Wilds, however. The North is, after all, where a coalition of humans and monsters had once attempted to build a bridge off the world's edge, and in retaliation, their Fort Terminus was attacked and destroyed. Human-monster relations never truly recovered after that attack. Each side blamed the other, and the possibility that the culprits had come from off the universe entirely was dismissed as impossible. Paranoid ramblings by people who had lost their minds lingering too close to the world's edge. Even then, most considered the edges of the universe too terrible to think about. But that is merely context. Many, many years passed after the fall of Fort Terminus before the first citadel was even built. And it didn't take long before the human inhabitants of the citadel struggled to survive. The Northern Wilds were deeply inhospitable lands then, filled with poisonous plants, deep swamps, and dangerous wildlife. It seemed the humans could hardly clear one patch of jungle to expand their settlements when a previous patch would overgrow again. Many starved or grew sick, and the weather, with its winds and monsoons, was so unpredictable that most attempts to farm the land were met with failure. Human survival in the North had become a question none knew the answer to. And that is when three brothers found themselves at the center of a very dangerous adventure. Their names, of course, were Aaron, Damien, and young Ferdinand of the Citadel. I confess that I did not see the beginning of their tale with my own eyes. The brothers were not remarkable men, neither wealthy nor well-known. And though I do pass my many hours watching the dramas of the universe unfold below me, it had never occurred to me to watch them in particular. They lived in a small fishing settlement by the sea and kept a humble home, catching hardly enough to feed themselves and never enough to sell. Their parents had passed, and they had no friends besides one another, to whom they were deeply, deeply loyal. But the story, as I have come to understand it, was something a little like this. In the midst of a great famine, the brothers one day caught a fish of considerable size. It was as wide across as Aaron's shoulders and longer than the hut in which they lived, large enough to feed them for months if preserved and rationed well. But just as Damien whetted his knife to gut the creature, it spoke. "Please, humans," it said, "you mustn't eat me. I am in need of your help. I come from a kingdom in the sea south of here, where the four regions of the universe converge. I have lost my way, and now have grown too large to swim through the narrow channels back to my home. But if you should return me to my kingdom, perhaps by land, I can promise a great reward for your pains." In a life that had always been harmonious, this was one of the first times that the brothers had ever disagreed on what to do. Aaron, who feared for his brother's health most of all, wished to eat the fish. Damien, who had studied the threats of the Northern Wilds and grew concerned that the brothers' simple way of life could not last forever, wished to see the fish's great reward. These two argued bitterly until young Ferdinand cast the final vote, as he would do three times before their adventure was over. I can't imagine how scared it must be, so far away from home. "We should help the fish because it is the right thing to do," said Ferdinand. Even Aaron stopped his quarreling to agree. Both Aaron and Damien found it very difficult to say no to their youngest brother. And so the brothers strapped the fish to their wagon, loaded many buckets with water to keep it damp, and began their long trek to the place where the four regions converge. They passed through the Citadel itself on their way, where a great crowd gathered around their catch. But no matter how much the starving people offered for their fish, they refused to give it up. They were very nearly captured by the Citadel's king for this, but Damien's quick thinking found a path to safety. Aaron pulled the wagon with all his might, and soon they had escaped. After many weeks of travel, the brothers at last arrived at the shore of the kingdom in the sea, and just as promised, they were offered a great reward. The fish, you see, was no ordinary fish. She was the princess of the undersea kingdom, long thought lost or dead, and as a minnow, she had been beloved by monster kind. And so the many monsters of the north banded together to find some way of repaying the brothers for their good deed. This was the first meeting of the Monster Senate, and after much deliberation, they decided on the gift they would give to the humans. Long ago, the universe created three tools to help us monsters survive in these northern wilds, and we will loan one of them to each of you, said the fish princess to the brothers. To Aaron, a hammer that can split the earth. To Damien, a spear that can cleanse the oceans. To young Ferdinand, a slingshot that can seed the skies. These relics belong to the universe and not to any one creature, and so you must return them to me here at my kingdom where the four regions converge at the end of 1 year. The brothers accepted this gift, overjoyed at their good fortune. But once again, Aaron and Damien disagreed on what should be done with their prize. Aaron argued that these relics could be of great use to the struggling humans of the Citadel, and they should be used to benefit their survival straight away. Damien suggested that such great power required careful thought and planning, and they should keep their relics secret until such a plan had been crafted. But for the second time, it was young Ferdinand who cast the final vote, and this time in Aaron's favor. If people are starving now, then now is when they need our aid. We must tell the king at once. And seeing how determined the young boy was to help, even Damien agreed with his heart, if not his reasoning. And so the brothers returned to the Citadel and showed their relics to the king, who set them to work immediately. With his hammer that could flatten the earth, Aaron worked day and night to clear the land for building and agriculture. And for his determination in flattening the roughest terrain, he was given the title the Resolute. With his spear that could seek out fish when thrown, Damien fed the Citadel's people. And because of how serene he appeared upon the water as he waited for the fish in the small hours of the morning, he was given the title the Tranquil. And with his slingshot that could control the weather, young Ferdinand seeded the skies with rain clouds that watered the crops of the Citadel's new farmland. For staying out even in the most terrible storms to ensure his work was done, he earned the title the Brave. But eventually, the king's ambitions grew too great for the brothers to keep up. Even Aaron, the Resolute, struggled to match the king's quotas. So the brothers lent their relics for free use by the king's appointed warriors, and thus the Knights of the Crown were first formed. And so, at last, humanity thrived in the northern wilds. The northern monsters grumbled at some of the steps the Citadel took. Without Aaron's watchful eye, the knights cared not who they displaced as they cleared the land. Without Damien's careful planning, the knights overfished the lakes and oceans. Without Ferdinand's tender heart, the knights paid no heed to how their demands upon the skies affected the weather of the surrounding regions. but the monsters reassured themselves at least that this would only last 1 year, and then the Citadel would have to find a way to live in concert with the universe around them. When the year was up, the brothers went to the king of the Citadel and informed him that the time had come to return the relics to the monsters of the universe. But the king refused. "One more year," said the king. "You will return to those monsters and tell them that we must have the hammer, the spear, and the slingshot for 1 more year. Only then will our Citadel be complete." The brothers knew that 1 year would never be enough, but as nothing would persuade their king, they agreed to deliver the message. Reluctantly, they returned empty-handed to the kingdom where the universe's 4 regions met. Their news was not well received. "I told you once, brothers, and I will tell you but once again. Those relics belong to the universe and not to any one creature," said the fish princess of the undersea kingdom. "We lent those gifts to you and not your king. But if you insist on being mere ambassadors, deliver to him this message. If the relics are not returned, we will visit the full force of the monsters of the northern wilds upon your citadel, and we will not stop our assault until our relics are returned." So the brothers returned to the citadel and delivered this message to the king, whereupon they were told to prepare themselves and their relics for battle, because war was coming to the citadel. At this, the most bitter of arguments broke out between Aaron and Damien. Aaron thought they should remain loyal to their neighbors and stand with their citadel. Damien, who had done the calculations to determine the scale of the war, thought they should take their relics and escape with their lives while they still could. But both were shamed when, at last, young Ferdinand the Brave stood up to his brothers and spoke his piece. "The monsters never needed to give us anything at all. The princess was right. We were given these gifts and we were wrong to give them away. We must refuse to use them in battle. To honor our promise and find peace is the only way forward we can accept." This was, alas, the third and final time that Aaron and Damien would listen to young Ferdinand, and not coincidentally, it was the final time that the three brothers would agree on a course of action. But listen, they did, and if they truly were saints, it is this choice that made them so. Aaron the Resolute sat in the Citadel spire day and night and refused to eat until the king changed his decree. Damien the Tranquil wove his most elegant and persuasive arguments to sway the king. And young Ferdinand the Brave never backed down, not even when the king set his armed Knights of the Crown against the brothers, captured them, and locked them in the Citadel's dungeon for their treason. This would have been an incredibly unpopular decision amongst the people of the Citadel, if they had known about it. For you see, the king knew that the brothers' efforts had made them heroes among the populace. And to a ruler, a hero is a very useful thing indeed. So while the brothers stayed secretly in the dungeon, the king named them saints for the very first time. And when the hammer was used to open the earth and swallow the monster army whole, the king declared that the great Saint Aaron the Resolute had been behind the act. When the spear was set loose to slaughter every monster in the sea, the king announced that Saint Damien the Tranquil had been the man to throw it. And finally, when the slingshot was used to summon lightning to incinerate the monster forces in the skies, the king proclaimed that young Saint Ferdinand the Brave had done the deed alone. These stories spread so far, so quickly, that even the monsters came to believe them. And thus began the interminable human-monster war, with the massacres on land, in the waves and in the sky. Even with the monster's relics, humanity did not escape the first battles of the human-monster war unscathed. By the time of the massacre in the waves, the fish princess, she who had lent the brothers their tools, had grown so large that when she was killed, her body dammed the river, drying it up. In a final sneak attack following the massacre in the sky, the king was devoured by a Wyvern attacker, and in the confusion, the Knights of the Crown used Aaron's hammer far too close to their citadel, toppling it completely.
The first citadel was destroyed by humans? The people who lived there?
It was indeed. And so the people of the citadel were lost, homeless, and leaderless. They needed heroes more than ever before. So the king's advisors elected to free the three brothers from their prison to guide them in an uncertain future. But if they hoped their saints would know the way forward, they would soon be disappointed. For looking out upon the ruins of their home, each brother was struck by a very different impulse. Saint Aaron said they must use their relics to help the humans rebuild. Saint Damien said they must take their relics and escape with their lives as quickly as they could. And Saint Ferdinand, of course, said this: "We have not yet fulfilled our promise, brothers. We must return our gifts to monsterkind, or this war will never end." But Aaron, looking out at the devastation among his neighbors, said that their help was needed now and the deed would have to wait. And Damien, thinking of the monster's rage, said they would never survive the journey. So while Saint Aaron and Saint Damien quarreled over what should be done, Saint Ferdinand took his slingshot and slipped away. And I must confess to you that I never saw that bravest of boys again.
But that can't be how it ends. What happened to Ferdinand?
And why on earth does the citadel still possess Saint Aaron's hammer?
And where did Saint Damien's spear and Saint Ferdinand's slingshot end up?
I will answer what I can. A drought soon struck the citadel, an inevitable effect of overusing Ferdinand's slingshot to call the rain. Aaron and Damien set out to find their brother and his slingshot, but they never succeeded. Perhaps Ferdinand knew they were looking for him. And why? For a rainstorm drenched the second citadel in just the nick of time. But I cannot know if this storm was Saint sent for certain. As for Aaron and Damien, after failing to find their brother, the rift between them became too great to mend. Saint Aaron stayed with the people of the second citadel and helped them to rebuild, but worked his body to exhaustion and died of an illness only a few years later. That is why his hammer remains in the human's possession. Saint Damien ventured forth on his own towards the western wastes, but was outnumbered and killed by monsters on his journey. And so the monsters reclaimed their spear.
But what about Ferdinand?
And the slingshot? Where is the slingshot?
Forgive me, but I do not know. Remember that I can see all from atop my mountain, but that doesn't mean I always do see all.
Stop talking in riddles and answer the question.
I can see but one thing at a time, and the universe is a very large place. The motions of kingdoms are clear to me. Three brothers traveling together with a giant fish are much more difficult to find, but possible. I saw Saint Damien's end only by following him with my gaze when he left the citadel. But a child slipping away like that, in the dead of night without warning? I lost him. And once lost, I had little chance of finding him again. We can guess where he may have gone, but that is all.
To the Undersea Kingdom.
What, Olala?
To the place where the four regions of the universe converge.
the kingdom of the fish princess. If Ferdinand was determined to return his slingshot, he'd have to go back to the place where he got it.
And if we are to destroy the invaders' flying machines, that slingshot is just what we'll need.
If we really want to use it.
Well, of course we want to use it.
I wonder.
Regardless, we're leaving. We've wasted entirely too much time here already. Olala, tie me to that sled again. We are descending the mountain.
Okay, Caroline.
Jeez, you're a real piece of work. You know that, Caroline? Half past dead and still barking orders.
And Sir Lamorak, remember the warning I've given you. If you ever take arms in battle again...
I get you, Kestrel, but forgive me if I'm not too worried about it. I've always been better with my brains than with a sword anyway.
Of course. Nothing to worry about at all.
If you've enjoyed this tale, please consider supporting The Penumbra. You can do so by buying our merchandise. Just go to thepenumbrapodcast.com and click on the store tab. You can also make a one-time donation to The Penumbra via PayPal at The Penumbra Podcast. Or, if you'd like to keep our stories running in the long term, we hope you will support us on Patreon. Every dollar helps. At just $4 per episode or higher, you will receive ad-free episodes 2 days before the public release. At the $7 level, you will gain access to behind-the-scenes content and production scripts. And at the $10 level, you will receive access to commentary tracks like this one from co-creators Harley Takagi-Kaner and Kevin Vibert. The hard thing about writing a genius is that in order to show as well as tell, you yourself need to have at least frequent enough genius ideas that the genius does not seem unsupported.
But we are simple men.
We are dum-dums. And so, like, it has been riding me a little bit that Lam's entire thing is Sir Lamorak of the piercing eye, that he is extremely intelligent and able to see through to the solution of any situation. And you need to give him an opportunity to test that out. We would like to give thanks to all who support us on Patreon, but especially to Juno Lupin, Juno G, Eska, Bettina Trevino, Alim Muktadir, Brittany Potter, Sophia and Juno Adler, The Emerald Ate This Podcast, Haha, The PI, The Train and the Knights, Mr. Me, Myself and I, Nore, Kira, Jack M. Cohen, Girl in the Midnight Sky, Thank You, Penumbra Team, for your amazing work, Braylon, Hannah and Leah's Adventures in Gender Shenanigans, Lady Guinevere Named Her New Bass Guitar After Queen Mira, Shelley Schrode, Kevin, Please Say Butts on Live Recording, Thanks, Jammy, Ospeet, Evett Connie, Diana Cause, Benjamin Fisher, SCP Chloe, Desert Willow and the Grounding Beast, Jun Gishoku, Skyfire Forever, The Lady Has Claimed Another One, Jay Hull, Stryker Flynn, Juno Steeled My Gender, Liv Allen, Alice the Time Lord, In Memory of Spiral Opal, Eden the Gay Bookworm, Michael David Smith, Kevin, Please Tell Me Today Is a Better Day to Be a Scaly Finally, Kiki's Podcast Patronage Service, Caroline Seidman, Radius Elna, Rain and Pippin from the Glen Dimension, Karen ZH, Genetic, Minchowski, Ash, Jamie Gunter, Britt Flanagan, and Angel Acevedo for their incredibly generous contributions per episode. Thank you. This tale, The Indomitable Duelist, was told by the following people. Stuart Evan Smith as Sir Lamorak of the Piercing Eye, Marge Dunn as Olala, Leslie Drescher as Caroline, Eleanor Cho Fellerhoff as Reaper Kestrel, Melissa Enulet as Rilla, Matthew Zanzinger as Damien, and Jason Mellon as Talfrin. The Penumbra is created and produced by Harley Takagi-Kaner and Kevin Vibert. If you wish to know more about the full production team, you can read about them in the show notes of this episode. I'm afraid that is our time for today, dear traveler. We hope you will join us again soon.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.